Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 134th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, at the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome again, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, the big political story in Iowa is the new Des Moines Register Republican caucus poll that was released on this Monday morning. It will go into print tomorrow morning. That poll shows that Donald Trump has a massive lead over the rest of the candidates in the upcoming Iowa caucus, 42% to 19% for Ron DeSantis, and the rest, well, the rest are pretty much nowhere.
Yes, and historically, this is a very large lead for any candidate in either party to have at this stage, 5 months before the Iowa caucuses. It's not common to have one candidate be above 40%. So although in some ways this poll isn't as good for Trump as some of the national polls showing him above 50% among likely Republican caucus goers, it was still an excellent poll for him. And I want to say that Ann Seltzer, who has been the Des Moines Register's pollster for decades, is one of the best in the business. She's very highly respected, and she has a very solid methodology. So although no poll, you know, you can't guarantee 100% accuracy, I have a lot of confidence in her methods.
So Trump had 42%, DeSantis 19%, Tim Scott 9%, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence each 6%, Chris Christie 5%, Vivek Ramaswamy 4%, Doug Burgum 2%, the rest of them 1% or less. So basically it's a two-person race as it is nationally all across the country. And it appears, according to, if you go deep into this poll, this Iowa poll, that Donald Trump's legal challenges just might be helping him in Iowa.
Well, they might be. And I guess I don't see it as a two-person race, because if you added together the support for DeSantis, Scott, Haley, Mike Pence, Chris Christie, it would be very competitive with Donald Trump. But because it is split, a spread along such a large field, it looks Donald Trump ends up having a lead of more than 20 points. So that's, in that sense, it's very unfortunate for Ron DeSantis. I'm sure he would have preferred a poll that showed it as more of a two-person race, even though he was very clearly in second place. But I agree with you. The poll suggested that the indictments are helping Trump. He polled better. The poll was in the field during the time that the Georgia indictment was announced, and he did better on the days after the indictment was announced. It was sort of like that onion story that we referenced a couple weeks ago, that Trump concerned that there won't be enough indictments to meet fundraising goals. That seemed to be a lot of people, a lot of the Republican base electorate feels that he's being unfairly targeted, and that increases his support.
Trump has 91 indictments that he's facing, including some this week that he's going to be called to answer for in Georgia. But another aspect of this poll that is almost stunning is that two-thirds of Iowa caucus goers, Republican caucus goers, do not believe Trump has committed any serious crimes.
It's very interesting. And I'm going back to the methodology, because this poll didn't just survey Republicans. It also surveyed some independents who said they plan to participate in the Republican caucuses. And Trump did much better among the self-identified Republicans than he did among those independents who plan to caucus next January. But of course, that's not nearly a majority. And I thought what was interesting is the two candidates in the field who have been the most critical of Trump, that's Chris Christie and Will Hurd, they had very high negative ratings compared to the other candidates. They had significantly higher negative ratings. And even Mike Pence had higher negative ratings than you would expect. So it just seems like people who are critical of Donald Trump, that backfires with the Republican electorate here.
So Laura, a plurality of Iowa GOP caucus goers say Trump should continue, or Trump should continue to lead the GOP no matter what's happened here. Plurality, 42%, 31% say the party needs a new leader. Seltzer was quoted today as saying she thinks there are still potentials for DeSantis and others to move up. What kind of potential do you see, though, to actually have them make a race of this thing?
It's really not looking very competitive. As I mentioned, and Dan Gild highlighted this, the candidates who are above 40% at this stage of the campaign tend to go on to win the Iowa caucuses and the nomination. And on the Republican side, the candidates who have made a late run to come from behind and do much better than expected have generally been candidates who find support among evangelical voters. I'm thinking of Mike Huckabee in 2008, Rick Santorum in 2012, and Ted Cruz in 2016. He actually beat Donald Trump in the caucuses in 2016. But right now, as I mentioned, Trump is doing better among the evangelical respondents than he is in general, so among Republicans at large. So it's really tricky to see. I mean, the social conservative evangelical voting bloc is very important in the Iowa caucuses, and I don't really see where somebody else is going to come from behind and make it a real race. I mean, Ron DeSantis and Tim Scott, one or the other of them would have to really consolidate the support of almost everybody who doesn't want Trump to be the nominee to make it competitive here.
So this poll came out 2 days, as we go live on Monday night, 2 days before the big debate in Milwaukee, the first GOP debate coming up Wednesday night. We're going to talk briefly about those who have qualified, just briefly. The big one who's qualified, Donald Trump, he will not show up at that debate. He's going to be talking to Tucker Carlson in a recorded interview. What do you think about this? First of all, I don't think he has to show up for the debates. He's the leader. What do you think?
Generally speaking, I mean, debates are benefit candidates who are behind. And usually for the front runners, there's an incentive not to debate. And we've had in the past, there's always been a convention that candidates agree to debate, but that has broken down a little bit. There have been other elections recently where one major party nominee has opted not to debate and it hasn't cost them the election. So I think that it's not going to be a concern to Republicans. And there's really no upside because if he shows up, I mean, he's already so far ahead that it's almost like it could only hurt him because the big news, if there's any slip up at a debate, that would be big news. Or if somebody lands a good line, a good attack line on him, and he's there and he reacts in a negative way, I mean, that would instantly become the story that he doesn't want. So I think it absolutely makes sense that he's not going to do any of these debates.
The Wall Street Journal editorially said today that Trump, in their words, clearly thinks he has the nomination all but wrapped up. And judging by the current polls, he has reason to think so. Do you think he has the nomination all but wrapped up?
I think so. I mean, I think a critical mass of Republican voters, not just in Iowa, but nationally, they view him as the de facto incumbent. I mean, he is not the president, but he is, it's almost the type of race, the type of campaign that you have where an incumbent is being challenged by a lot of other people. This just, they're not anything close to being on a level playing field. And I think that that other candidates are going to have to somehow convince voters that there's a reason to reject Trump and support somebody else. And so far, nobody is making that case very effectively.
I will go on record as agreeing with you on this August 21st. I believe he has the nomination all but wrapped up. Ron DeSantis, he's got to have a big night on Wednesday to have any shot whatsoever. And the New York Times embarrassed him this past weekend, gaining access to hundreds of pages of debate advice for DeSantis, prepared by his main super PAC. It advises him, among other things, to take a sledgehammer to Vivek Ramaswamy, to defend Trump when Chris Christie attacks him, and attack Joe Biden and the news media no less than 3 to 5 times. Okay, so now that we know that this is out there, the question is Ron DeSantis going to follow this like a lemming Wednesday night?
Well, and a lot of people ask, well, how did they get hold of this debate prep? And this is one of the problems that DeSantis has because so much of the money is being spent by this super PAC rather than his campaign. His campaign has been hemorrhaging money. And because the super PAC can't officially coordinate with the campaign, they had to put this out there on the web where it was publicly accessible, and somebody tipped the New York Times reporters that it was out there. That's how they were able to get it. And you know, I'm sure he would prefer that if his debate prep were all being done in-house and not by people with a super PAC who show it to the world. I think that he's gonna, if he does have some kind of attack on Vivek Ramaswamy, it will look so obvious that he was coached to do that. I think he may probably drop that, but I mean, he probably is going to defend Donald Trump because that's basically what he's been doing whenever he's been asked about these criminal indictments.
Most of the candidates have defended Trump or at least criticized the judicial system for criminalizing politics. Is that the way? They're way behind Trump. They're not making any headway. Is that the way anybody can win this thing?
Well, see, I guess I don't view most of these candidates as in it really to win the nomination. I think Ron DeSantis is in it to win. Mike Pence may have some belief that he can win, even though there's no evidence at all that he has any base of support. But I think most of the rest of the field is in it for a job in the next Republican administration, with the exception of the ones who have been extremely critical of Donald Trump, like Chris Christie and Will Hurd. But most of these candidates, Tim Scott, Vivek Ramaswamy, Perry Johnson, I just don't think that they are actually campaigning to defeat Trump.
Okay, among those who are going to be there very briefly on Wednesday night, Pence, Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Chris Christie, who's really going to be the attack dog against Trump, no question about that. Doug Burgum, Asa Hutchinson, maybe Perry Johnson, maybe Francis Suarez, maybe Will Hurd. And I wonder if after the debates, there's going to be some rationality that kicks in and says, we can't win this, and some people are going to drop out. I doubt it, but that would be the hope that DeSantis would have.
I think some people are just trying to raise their profile, and so there's no incentive for them to drop out because there are other debates to come that they may or may not qualify for. But if they have a chance at qualifying to raise their national profile, why not stay in it? So I think that most of them will stay in it. I think Chris Christie, he was very entertaining during the debates prior to the 2016 caucuses. And I want to add also that this Des Moines Register poll, one thing that I thought was interesting is that Chris Christie was at 5%, even though he has not campaigned in Iowa at all. He is not spending any money in Iowa. So that shows that, I mean, there still is a group within the Republican and Republican-leaning independents in Iowa who really don't like Trump and, I mean, really want to move on. Not the people who reluctantly want to move on because they think Trump can't win, but the ones who really dislike him because I mean, he did much worse than 5% in the 2016 caucuses, and that was after he actually competed here.
All right, and what would Capital Week be? And we are certainly many things. What would we be if we didn't have word of a late new indictment against Donald Trump? This one came out last week in Georgia. 18 other people were also indicted. It's a 98-page indictment. We don't have to go over all of it. It's kind of a blunderbuss thing. The prosecutor says she wants to try all 19 people at one time in May of next year. That is never going to happen.
Yeah. So I want to say, so I guess I want to just the overview because people can go online and they can read these indictments if they want to. The big differences between this and the Jack Smith, the special counsel's indictment related to trying to overturn the election, they're somewhat overlapping because some of the things that are being charged in Georgia are related to the overall plan to not to to subvert the peaceful transfer of power after the 2020 election, which Donald Trump lost. But whereas Jack Smith only indicted Donald Trump, several unindicted co-conspirators clearly trying to move this thing along quickly. He charged fairly conservatively, whereas Fani Willis in Georgia kind of charged everybody with everything, right? Charge, it was a massive conspiracy. The whole thing of trying to not recognize Biden's victory in Georgia, she treated the whole thing like a big criminal conspiracy. And it's very unusual to have 19 people on trial at the same time. I doubt that is going to happen. And but it is important to have this going on in state court because it famously the president cannot issue any pardon. So even if Donald Trump were to be elected again, he couldn't pardon himself or anybody else if they are convicted of any of these crimes that are being charged in Georgia.
So Trump now faces five major court cases over the next year. And one question that some people still might not be clear on is, can he serve as president if he is convicted of any of his alleged crimes? The short answer, Laura, yes.
It's that seems to be the answer. I mean, there are law professors who have been writing this summer. There's been a big debate going on in the academic legal community about whether a clause in the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution doesn't that bar Donald Trump from serving because he participated in an insurrection? But that's never been enforced. We've never been in that situation before. It's not clear how it even could be enforced. So I think that definitely, and I doubt that most of these trials will occur before the November 2024 election. I think there will be a lot of delays, at least in several of the cases. So, but so far, I haven't seen any sign that he would not be able to serve if he were elected.
And only briefly, the presidential candidates, the other ones, weighed in last week on his latest indictment. Pence said the Georgia election was not stolen. He's been more and more outspoken on that. DeSantis, criminalization of politics. Tim Scott said the legal system's being weaponized. We've heard this all before, the same people saying the same things.
Yes, and they at the Iowa State Fair, Tim Scott happened to be at the Iowa State Fair on Tuesday. These indictments came down late Monday, and some reporters were trying to press him on this. Well, do you think it was appropriate to for him to make that call to the governor of Georgia and others in Georgia and ask them to find him votes? And he just wouldn't answer the question. So it'll be interesting to see at the debate whether the panel or the moderators really press these candidates for answers to those questions. Like, okay, we know that you think that it's not appropriate that there is been a politicized Justice Department, but what do you really think about the conduct at the center of these criminal indictments? Is that conduct okay for a president to do? Because most of them don't want to answer that question.
It is exactly 15 minutes after the hour, and this is KHY's Capital Week. Yes, it is, with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We're here every week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. If it seems as if we're talking quickly tonight, we have a lot of stuff to go over. Let's briefly go over the candidates who appeared at the Iowa State Fair after our last show Monday night. We don't have to talk about all of them. They included Asa Hutchinson, Tim Scott, Ryan Binkley, Perry Johnson, Will Hurd, Asa Hutchinson again, Chase Oliver, the Libertarian. Laura, pick one of those and let's talk about them.
Yes. Well, Asa Hutchinson is just struggling to find his feet. I mean, it seems like he's been overtaken by Will Hurd in terms of a publicly known critic of Trump. As we mentioned last month, Will Hurd was booed off the stage at the big Republican Party of Iowa fundraiser. And it just seems like Asa Hutchinson is not making much of an impression with anybody. Tim Scott is really trying to be the guy everybody likes. The Des Moines Register poll seems to show that he has the best ratio of favorable to unfavorable impressions. And he kind of stuck with that model, praising Governor Reynolds and not criticizing Donald Trump. Ryan Binkley just isn't really going to be a factor in this campaign.
Oh, Ryan Binkley. All right, the pastor. Yeah. Perry Johnson. He said everybody's a long shot for the GOP nomination except for Trump. That was a great line. And let's see, Chase Oliver, the Libertarian. Yeah, the Libertarian was there on Saturday at the Register soapbox. He called for voters to reject the false political binary, his words, in American politics. He said there are a lot of voters out there looking for something different who are sick and tired of the same old 20th century politicians in the 21st century. I think he has something there, but our system is not developing those new people.
Well, there's a very crowded Libertarian field, so I don't know that Chase Oliver is actually going to be the Libertarian nominee. But the Libertarian candidate in 2016, Gary Johnson, that was the high watermark. He got the more votes than any Libertarian who'd ever run for president. But third party voting really collapsed in 2020. And I think that if it ends up being a Trump-Biden rematch, I just don't think that many people will end up voting third party. But I guess we're going to find out. I wanted to say about Perry Johnson that he keeps recycling all the same lines. And the one that always makes me laugh is when he says, "No, I know this is some people aren't going to like this, but I'm going to get rid of the Department of Education," which is just what Republican candidates have been promising to do since the 1980s. So I think that, again, I think he's angling for a cabinet position if Donald Trump were to become president again.
And one more note from the Iowa State Fair, we promise. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia congresswoman, a little controversial, a little outspoken. She went to the fair on Saturday. She tweeted. Can we say tweeted or did she exit?
I still say tweeted.
I say that she wanted to make sure everybody knew she will vote for Trump next year. What a shock. I didn't know she was going to vote for Trump next year.
And she also told KCCI in an interview that she thinks it's great that Donald Trump is not going to participate in any of the debates. He doesn't need to be there. I just want to say that the same rules don't really apply to Donald Trump as to other candidates. I mean, as we've mentioned, there's no precedent for somebody being indicted in four different jurisdictions with dozens of criminal charges and still leading a political race. And there's also no precedent really for the way Donald Trump, I mean, he parachuted into the Iowa State Fair. He was there for a couple of hours. Mostly he had surrogates, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. If another candidate did that, they would be harshly criticized for not putting in the legwork and not spending the time and walking around and talking to Iowans. But that just doesn't seem to bother people about Trump.
Trump is something we have never seen in the history of this country. And I agree with you. He is impervious to criticism from his base. It doesn't matter what he's indicted for, what he's accused of. It doesn't matter.
Right. And you notice in the Des Moines Register poll, we didn't talk about the favorable ratings for the other politicians, but Kim Reynolds, Governor Kim Reynolds, had the highest ratings of all the people surveyed, of higher than Senators Ernst or Grassley. And yet Donald Trump got a lot of publicity for publicly criticizing the governor last month. And that just doesn't seem to have hurt him at all with likely caucus goers.
The Gazette said today, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and I think I agree with this, that Kim Reynolds had a really big Iowa State Fair. She was really the star there.
Yes, and she just loves the fair. She is a real natural. She tends to go to the fair all 11 days every year and setting up these fairside chats, which, by the way, were apparently paid for by her campaign. Those were not paid for out of the governor's office. I tried to nail that down last week. But yes, she really got a lot. She always manages to be present in a lot of places at the fair. But I think this year, because of all the presidential candidate interviews, it even did that a little bit more. I will say that all of the statewide officials spend a little bit of time at the fair, but State Auditor Rob Sand, he was there quite a few days. He was there at least 6 or 7 days of the fair, participating in a lot of the activities. And he seems to be, in that sense, emulating the governor's strategy a little bit.
Rob Sand, the only Democratic statewide office holder, and maybe a hope for next year, or no, a few years from now. Governor Reynolds, she went from the Iowa State Fair to Texas. She's down there supporting Governor Greg Abbott and other GOP governors.
Yes, there was a joint press conference this afternoon that I watched online that they not really much new. They all were very critical of the Biden administration's border policy. All of these governors had sent down National Guard or state troopers to help with the border police in Texas. And so they basically just praised what Governor Abbott has been doing.
All right, let's talk about some other things. How about a contest in the first congressional district in Iowa next year? Democrat Christina Bohannon announcing she's going to run again against GOP incumbent Marianne Miller Meek. She lost by 6 or 7 points last time. What's going to make a difference potentially this time?
Well, that, a lot of people say that, but remember that Marianne Miller Meeks ran for Congress 3 times unsuccessfully before she managed to win by 6 votes in 2020 and then was reelected by more like 6.5% in 2022. So there is precedent. Tom Harkin even was somebody who didn't win on his first congressional try and was elected the next time. Christina Bohannon is really going to be banking on a few things. First of all, turnout is always higher in a presidential election cycle, and she's going to be hoping that there is much higher Democratic turnout. I spoke with her. The Dobbs decision of the U.S. Supreme Court last year has made reproductive rights a much more salient issue, particularly since the Iowa legislature just moved to ban almost all abortions. And so that is going to be something she emphasizes. Just generally, a second-time candidate, it's easier for them to become known. They already have a certain amount of name ID from their first campaign. And she raised about $500,000, more than $500,000 actually, in the first 24 hours, which was more than she raised in her initial announcement in 2019 or in 2021 when she was running in the last cycle. So she thinks that she's going to be able to put together a well-organized and well-funded campaign. And in a presidential election year, let's see what happens.
Well, I believe we're going to right here on Capitol Week. I'm planning to be here. I hope you are.
Yes.
No
I should say
Democrat.
that the election forecasters mostly consider that a likely Republican district, but things can change.
We have no Democratic candidates officially announced yet in districts 2 and 3, but Ryan Melton has announced in District 4 against Randy Feenstra, and you're hearing somebody else is about to announce.
Yes, I think that it's possible there could be a competitive Democratic primary in the 4th district because Dr. Jay Brown of Ames seems to be leaning toward announcing. So we may have more on that in next week's program.
We might, but what are the odds that either one of them or anybody who is going to beat Randy Feenstra in District 4, which is heavily, heavily, heavily Republican?
Yeah, the 4th district is really considered a safe Republican district, but I think that it is for Democrats in Iowa, and I talk to Democrats very often that it is important to have candidates on the ballot in a lot of races, even the races that you're not going to win. And so I think that there's going to be a real strong effort to recruit more Democratic candidates, not only for districts like that at the congressional level, the federal races, but also for the state legislative races.
Now, I will tell you as an insider scoop here that Laura Bellin was quite excited about this next story when she told me last week. She reported that Matt Blake says he's going to run in State Senate District 22 against GOP incumbent Brad Zahn. Explain, please, your excitement, Laura.
So I have to say, I just love state legislative campaign coverage. I really enjoy that. That's something I try to provide, the most in-depth state legislative campaign coverage. To me, that's more interesting than the Iowa caucus campaign news that 100 other reporters are keeping their eye on, these Iowa legislative races. And there aren't as many competitive state Senate seats as there used to be. Remember, there are only 50 Senate districts and only 25 of them are on the ballot in each election cycle. And of those, probably only four or five are going to be competitive. So this is going to be one of the most highly competitive races. It covers the northwest suburbs of Des Moines. Brad Zahn, he has served in the Iowa Senate now. This is his fifth term. And this is a district that, like many suburban areas, has been trending, used to be solid Republican, has been trending into more of a swing district. And actually, these precincts voted for Biden in the last presidential election. So I think it's going to be one of the most interesting races. Zahn is the only Iowa Republican state senator who represents a district that Joe Biden carried. And Matt Blake is an Urbandale City Council member. He did very well. He finished first out of a field of seven candidates in 2019 in the Urbandale City election. So I just think it's going to be a very interesting race, really one of the top legislative races to watch next year.
And I should say that Laura got excited because it appears to be a close race. And I get very excited about the caucuses. So between the two of us, we make quite a team here on Capitol Week. OK,
absolutely.
All right. Let's go down to the Polk County Court ruling in favor of LULAC. You reported that you broke the story, I believe.
So the League of Latin American Citizens filed this lawsuit way back in 2021 against Secretary of State Paul Pate. They're arguing that the Secretary of State's office and county auditor should provide voting materials in languages other than English. And they got a favorable court ruling, a preliminary court ruling in June. But last Friday, there was a hearing on what should be the court's declaratory judgment. And that order was issued late in the day on Friday. So the upshot is that the injunction that had been in place since 2008 that said Iowa election officials cannot print voting materials in any language other than English, that has been lifted, and not only for voter registration forms, which was at the initial core of the lawsuit, but also for all other voting materials, ballots, information about voting. And so that's a very important victory for the League of United Latin American Citizens, which is the largest Latino advocacy group in Iowa. I should say that the state may appeal this ruling. They have 30 days from last Friday to file a notice of appeal. So we'll see what happens. It could end up going up to the Iowa Supreme Court.
We have about 3 minutes left for a couple of stories, one of them involving Adrian Dickey. He's the state senator who got into trouble at RAGBRAI. Well, now he is filing a civil lawsuit against, well, my goodness, his daughter.
Yes. So this happened, the lawsuit that his daughter and her mother and stepfather filed against him, that actually predated the legal trouble he had at RAGBRAI. He was charged with a simple misdemeanor of interference with official acts because he didn't clear a Sac County road at RAGBRAI. So that's pending. But the civil lawsuit, his daughter has accused him of forging her signature on a car lien application and some forms, official forms related to the car title. And he, last week, his attorney filed an updated reply to that lawsuit, and he's countersuing, basically filed a counterclaim that he says that the plaintiffs have defamed him, basically, and that he's seeking $120,000 in damages. The attorneys I talked to say you can't really file this kind of a defamation claim. It's not going to be successful, but it certainly is an escalation. I had thought, well, maybe he's going to try to settle the civil case so that he doesn't have to deal with the publicity of a trial, but instead he escalated it.
About a minute left. The Iowa Utilities Board is going to hold a pipeline hearing tomorrow. That's Tuesday, as we go live on Monday night. This after the North Dakota Public Service Commission rejected a permit application from Summit Carbon Solutions to run hundreds of miles of pipelines through North Dakota. They've also filed to run hundreds of miles through Iowa. So the hearing is going to take place tomorrow, though opponents have said, why don't you postpone it?
Yes, and many people are critical of the Iowa Utilities Board for not postponing this hearing. I should say that North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, when he was at the state fair last week, he did say that he expects that North Dakota's utilities regulator is going to end up approving this pipeline. Summit Carbon Solutions has said they'll change their route and do what's necessary. But the Iowa Utilities Board, they have made a lot of smaller decisions in this docket that are unfavorable to those who are trying to oppose the pipeline. So I think there's a growing unease that maybe this thing is already going, it's already fixed.
So much to report on next week on Capitol Week, the debate, the Republican debate, the Iowa pipeline hearing, and more. What are you going to be looking at?
Oh, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on that pipeline hearing. And also this week, most school districts go back to school. Kids are going back to school. I'm going to see if there are any issues related to the enforcement of the new bathroom bill or any of the library or curriculum restrictions that are now in place because of the new laws passed during this year's legislative session.
And we are planning to report on the changes that school kids will be facing in school next week on Capitol Week, presuming there's no new Trump indictment or some other stuff nationally.
Yeah, don't know of anything that's coming down the pike in terms of another indictment for a while.
That's it, Laura. We're out of time. You have a great week.
You too, Dennis.
A reminder that the views and opinions expressed right here on this edition of Capitol Week did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here in the same time slot next week. Yes, we will. And as usual, we're going to talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining that takes place in Iowa politics. And as always, we hope you can join us. Tell your friends. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.